probably what you do with your 1242s with most of your clients, right? Tell you about their grandkids.
right. They end up feeling really good.
I know. And you know what? It's the most important thing you can do.
Hmm.
It's really weird. You think, oh my God, they care about performance. No, they don't. If you show an interest in them and their kids and their grandkids and sincere interest, that's what they care about.
Yeah.
They want to tell their little story and want somebody to really be interested. And then they'll call you about whether they should lease or buy a car, you know, and that's when you know you've won.
Mm-hmm.
You've won the game when that's the case, right?
Yes, I apologize.
That's okay. So this week is about energy. It's kind of interesting. We talked about the five-star model, and we talked about the fact that maybe the five-star model, because of your situation, isn't as applicable. We'll get back to that, okay?
Okay.
But I think as a coach and a teacher for your office, you need to know that. If some people in your office are on teams, you need to be able to coach them using the five-star model, because
mm-hmm.
it gives you structure to teach them.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I've talked to a couple so far about, you know, just making sure they understand their roles on a team, you know, who does what, because everybody's doing the same thing. And then they go back and they think about it. And I have had a couple of them come back kind of informally and tell me, well, listen, we do such and such and so, and you know, this is what I'm really trying to get this person to do. And so, it does help. I agree. But even in your own mind, like just trying to compartmentalize what you're focusing on,
yes.
It helps me. It definitely helps me to think about that segment of, you know, who is focusing on. My son, he's really good at what he does from a business standpoint and as a practitioner. He's in orthotics, but he developed, you know, you've got these patients who come through and nobody had ever sat down and segmented all the different parts of their business for them. So that's really helped them. And now he has sort of it's almost like a patient life cycle progression, you know, where they know where they are at any one time. And then they highlight these people based on their, I guess based on the amount of time, for example, if they have insurance, the insurance window might be open for 90 days. Well, if they're in the last 30 days of that, that person needs to bubble up to the top and they've got to get this thing filed and put to bed. Otherwise they stand to lose money, on the whole thing. So, you know, it's a constantly evolving thing, but it made me think about it when we're looking at that, the director of planning and implementation and all that. And, that's what he's had to become for there. So he tried to get me on to this kind of life cycle. He's like, Dad, you can orient this to your business. I promise you. So, and he's right, because you are going through kind of a specific life cycle with every client, even though it evolves and continues to grow. It is very specific, you know?
Yeah, that's a really interesting idea. You know, and I don't think we spend enough time thinking about that, do we? You know, we talk about red letter days, right? You get married, you have a baby, but we don't spend enough time thinking about the life cycle of a human, right? And what are all the events and, you know, we talk about retirement but nobody knows what to do with somebody when they retire. You'd be surprised. They don't really do a good job. I remember when I was an FA and somebody would retire, you know what I'd think about? Oh, you're going to get your rollover. We're going to take the 401k and move it into an IRA. It's so ridiculous. Because, you know, that's not what's on the mind of the client. Because, and until you go through it, you don't understand it. It'd be like trying to explain to somebody what it's like to have a baby. when they're a single person. You say, you know, you should get married and have some children. It's really amazing. And the guy would go, are you mental?
You know, it might be the guy that's already had the children explaining it to him.
Right. So when you say, yeah, oh, I understand what it's like to retire. I can imagine it. No, you can't. And so you really have to try and understand and teach people, you know, let's say you got a 26-year-old coming in the business. You got to, you know, how does he know what it feels like to get married and have a baby and retire and lose a loved one and, you know, be lonely and, you know, all those things that human beings go through.
Yeah.
You know, they're 26-year-olds just looking at, oh my God, you know, I got this whole world in front of me and I can't wait till these old people get out of the way and I can take over, you know.
Doesn't always work that way either. So.
No, I know. Anyway, that's a good topic of discussion, and maybe we fit that into our teaching model. Questions on Jim Lehrer's writing a new book. You might link up with Jim Lehrer, LOEHR, on LinkedIn. Congratulate him on his new book, and maybe even buy it. Okay, because he writes great books and they're fabulous. And he's a great human being. He's a friend of mine, and he's made a great contribution to the world.
Yeah, I can tell. He's pretty spot on with his book. I've been reading The Power of Full Engagement. And
yay, good.
He didn't even know me. How could he have written this?
He knows you.
Except for the smoking, you know, that's pretty much it.
Well, he's really, you know, I used to, when someone would do, I don't know what happens when you all have somebody that does $1 million, right? For us, it was a red letter day, right? Big deal. Somebody does $1 million and everybody take them out to dinner or something. I'd take them down to Jim Lehrer's for the weekend and spend, you know, $5,000 on them. But I would do it as a group, right? So everybody that year that did $1 million for the first time, I took 40 guys down usually every year to Jim Lehrer's. So that's $200,000 I'd spend on them.
Wow.
And it was worth every cent. Hmm. And it would change their life because you spend, you know, you get a full on physical, you learn, proper amount of sleep. What's a good diet? How do you meditate? You know, what's the value of yoga? When can that work in your life? You know, what's 60 minutes of exercise going to, you know, vigorous exercise going to do? What's your real body fat? What's, you know, all these things that you never knew. And we discovered people with heart disease. We discovered people with all kinds of issues. And they would come back and then forever, ever from then on, Rob Knapp was the guy that changed my life. Mm. So as a leader, how many times do you get that? I'm running the district now. I've got 2,000 people, 5,000 people working for me with 2,000 financial advisors. And I got people saying, Rob Knapp, you know, I'm in North Dakota. And Rob Knapp changed my life, right?
Yeah.
So I would also take him to, whenever I took over a new office, I'd put him through Larry Wilson's ropes course. And he had a program called Playing to Win. And that changed their life. It was about change, getting people to change. How do you get people to change? How do you get them to work as a team? How do you get them to be their best self? And Larry was just really good at it. And his book, Playing to Win, is a staple for our process here. Unfortunately, you know, when Larry became a very good friend of mine, I moved down to the island where he lived, and that's where I live in the winter now. He has since passed away, but I got to spend a lot of time with him. And it was like, you know, going to the mountain. So Jim and I just were in touch with each other a couple days ago talking about his new book. So anyway, it's for real. It works. It helps you with your, you know, your physical strength is important to your mental toughness. We can't all go through military training. We can't all go through becoming ER specialists. We can't all have the opportunity to become ninja warriors for some other occupation, but we can learn how they think. And why do they perform so well in a crisis? And how do you stay calm in the middle of total chaos? And it's really important in our business, because mental toughness in our business is critical. I once saw, here I am, right? I'm fortunate to have been trained as a naval aviator to understand what it's like to lose an engine on takeoff or on final and have to deal with it and bring the plane in safely. And, you know, because they're constantly pulling shit on you when you go on a checkup, right? So they kill the engine at the wrong time, right? And scare the shit out of you, but you got to stay calm and do the emergency procedures and get the plane back on track. Well, it was one of the crises would have been probably 1987 crash. It was. And I was dealing with it. It was fine. People said, how can you be so calm? And I said, lose an engine on final. That's a crisis. Yeah, this is just money, right? So I was trained to do it, but met other managers. One of them was so upset by the market that he went home. I said, you know, somebody called me from the other office and said, well, you know, we need some help here because we got this going on. I said, where's your manager? He went home. He was so upset he went home. Are you kidding? It's like a captain leaving the ship, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
So he was not mentally tough, and it proved it, right, in the middle of a crisis. So mental toughness can only be tested in the middle of a crisis. So, but you can prepare for it. You can play it. You can play act it. You can run drills. You know, the market just crashed, went down 5,000 points. What are we going to do? So you can prepare for it. But this proper amount of sleep, exercise, and diet is not just about feeling good. And it's not about longevity. It's about your ability to perform in a crisis and being mentally tough. And you can't be mentally tough if you're physically a wreck. You just don't have the energy. You don't have the energy to come in and work every day. Talk about handle a really stressful environment where you don't get to sleep much. Right? So if you go into it, I'm reading a diary of World War II. And some Marines that are going in to fight on islands, and it's their story. It's written by one of the guys that did it. And you can just give up on sleep, okay? You don't sleep. So now try fighting and trying to win and be calm when you get no sleep.
Yeah.
You know, so you just take cat naps whenever you can. That's what it's like, you know, when you have a market crash. It's hard, you know, you got to be mentally tough and learn to discipline yourself in terms of being tough. You can have the greatest plan in the world and it all goes to hell in the middle of the chaos. So what are you going to do? Stay calm and operate. That's what Napoleon said. I just want a leader that can be basically normal in the middle of the chaos. You don't have to be the greatest just don't panic. And how many people panic, right? Some of the people you respect the most panic in the middle of a crash, this last crash, right? How many people actually were just a wreck?
Yeah. No, I've got one of them.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah, otherwise, they're perfectly normal human beings, right? But they just can't handle stress. Mm-hmm. My brother is still in cash.
Is that right? Did he go to cash in March?
And he was in the business for 40 years. He just said, at this point in my life, I can't handle it.
Yeah.
So he's not mentally, physically tough. He's not physically in good shape and mentally. So it's affecting every part of his life.
Wow.
And so he's missed the entire, 100% recovery. He was in cash before it went down. Mm. So he could have doubled his money had he gone back in, but he never did. Mm-hmm. Now he's telling me that this is the big one. Okay. Just get ready. And it's over. And I'm like, okay, so what? He's like, how can you do that? I said, I don't care. Okay. I'm fine. Mm-hmm. I have enough cash for 2 years and I can handle it.
Yeah.
And my gains are big, but who cares? I said, it's not important compared to, being mentally and physically at peace. That's what's important.
And I think you spend all your time on that negativity. And listen, I can do it just as good as anybody else, but then you'd miss out on the relationship with your granddaughter and your children, your wife. All of that. I mean, it's a sacrifice. It's a trade-off. People that don't believe that are fooling themselves. I just can't believe all the time. I've got people that I deal with. I mean, FAs and the amount of time they deal on things that are so completely out of their control and is absurd. The things that they allow to hijack their mental energy. And I tell them, listen, you've got only so much mental energy you can spend today, and you're going to spend it all on something you can't even control. It's maybe right. Out of your control, whether it's a Morgan Stanley policy or something that is, you're not going to affect it. I mean, you might as well just move on and, focus on something positive that you can make happen today for you. But
well, either do something about it.
Yeah.
Or don't and move on. I had a guy, this is an interesting story. I had a guy, it was back in the 80s. Let's see, 1979, 80. It would have been like 1981, and the markets were shitty, and, interest rates were 22%, and the stock market was crappy, and, and he was so worried. Jamie Adler. I'm in the merchandise marts, my first office, and he's worrying. He can't work. He's just, can't sleep. He's a wreck. I said, Jamie, I'm going to help you. He said, okay, good. He said, I'm going to meet you at 9:00 tomorrow morning. I'm going to come in and I'm going to help you. And he goes, okay, good. So I met him at 9:00 in his office and I sat down. I said, look, you've been worrying, right? He said, oh God, I can't sleep. It's just terrible. I said, we're going to focus all of that worrying on the next hour. Okay. And I'm going to help you. I said, what we're going to do is you and I are going to sit here for the next hour. We're not going to say anything. We're just going to sit and worry.
Awesome.
If you sit there, I'm going to sit here. You're going to worry and I'm going to worry and we're both going to just worry for an hour. And then we're not going to worry anymore. Okay. And then we're going to go on and do whatever we're going to do because we can get all the worrying into 1 hour, I think. But let's try anyway. So I got a lot of things I'm worried about. So you worry about what you're worried about. I'll worry about what I worry about. All right. Well, we're not going to say anything. We're just going to worry. He goes, you're a fucking nut.
So was it a short meeting?
It was a very short meeting. He started laughing. He said, get the hell out of here. I said, okay. I said, but I'm willing to do it. Whatever you need.
God.
Try that.
Oh, we've got it too. Oh, good Lord. Okay. That's not helping. I mean, you know. Yeah. I guess people that they want to just complain. And I said, well, let's just take a few minutes. Let's just complain everything. Just list them out. And let's figure out something we can do something about and that we can't do anything about. And that's 90% of those are going to be things we can't do anything about. So we'll move on. So
he never came back to me. I said, as soon as you want it, I said, if you really need help worrying, I'm here for you.
Yeah. That's funny. Well, I like to think I take action, but I do spend a pretty fair amount of time worrying. You know, and this whole thing does make you reflect on, you know, I mean, it's the old question about what's most important to you, you know, and you get down to your health and your family and your, you know, your kind of emotional well-being and, you know, taking care of the people around you, whether it's your parents, your children, your, you know, which is good. It causes you to refocus. And it makes you think about times in your life when you were very focused and then all the collateral benefits you get from that at the same time.
When you're excited, when you're happy, when you're really focused. You cannot, fear is a debilitating disease.
Mm-hmm.
It freezes your creativity.
Fear
is sort of the opposite of creativity. Sort of one end is creativity and happiness, and the other end is fear and doubt. And when you're in the fear and doubt, there's no creativity.
No.
I mean, it isn't life about creativity to me? It's about coming up with the next new great idea. Coming up with a good, I mean, there's right now, there's breakthroughs happening in every single industry. And if you're worried and fearful, you're not researching anything. You're not finding your next good employee. You're not helping somebody grow. You're not doing anything. You're just fearful. You're just frozen. I studied people surviving disasters. And why do some people survive disasters and others don't? They freeze. The one thing they said in surviving disasters is to keep moving, keep trying to survive. Basically, keep moving. If you freeze, you're dead. There was a plane crash and the plane broke in half. It was on the ground burning. And there was an exit and the woman next to the exit was frozen in her seat and they couldn't get over her to get out the exit.
Again, wow.
So they're lined up trying to get out the exit. The guy's at the end of the line and looks and there's a burning half, the plane is burning behind him. And these people are lined up. He turned, put something over his head and ran through the burning plane and out that way. They found the rest of the people burned to death, died inside the plane because they weren't, they just froze. Over and over and over, it happens. So the question is, how many of your guys are freezing up when things get crappy? And what you have to do is take some action. So one of the things that I always tell people is, look, do something. Reinvest dividends. Dollar cost average. You know, do something. Rebalance. Reduce. Do something. But don't just sit there.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just got a client to finally do something. You know, he's been frozen So it wasn't a huge thing, but it was something. At least we're moving forward again, you know, and that's big.
Well, the next big thing that's going to happen is when they approve COVID-19, right? When they approve the vaccine, and the market will explode again. And so what I've told people is pick your companies that you'd love to own. Pick some spots that you want to own them and go ahead and put in your limit orders. And then you'll be buying when everybody else is puking. Because I said, you know, you knew this sell-off was coming. You just didn't know when, right? Mm-hmm. You don't get a hyperbolic like this without getting a correction. So this is a standard correction in a bull market. It's just textbook. But it will scare people out. And the good news is your bull-bear ratio will get good again. It's still pretty good, but it will get really good. And you'll get some prices on companies that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise. You just, you know, you'd love to own some of these stocks, but, it, you know, for me, I just couldn't pay up for them. Mm-hmm. So you pick, anyway. That's, you know, so you try and say, hey, good, we're going to have a fall sale on securities. Terrific. What do you need? What do you want to own? You know, what are the industry groups? What, if you want to, you know, buy ETFs, what are your industry sector groups that you think are going to perform the best? What do you, you know, what's going on here? I mean, we have a great stock market, but we have terrible investors.
Yeah.
So the question is, are you going to be a good investor or are you going to be a terrible investor? Are you going to be buying, you know, when everything's on sale, or are you going to wait till everything is at a premium because you're so emotional? So this is where good coaching comes in, and you can help your FAs. And you can teach them to be mentally tough. So think about an office where everybody in the office, when things got tough, they exercise twice a day. Instead of running in the morning, they run in the morning and they run at night. Or they bike in the morning and they bike at night. Do they need to do it twice a day? No. But when the stress level goes up, you exercise more. Everybody goes and works more. No, exercise more. So do two a days when the stress level goes up, because it kicks out endorphins. The endorphins will last for 3 or 4 hours in the morning and you'll feel great no matter what is happening. And then you go and exercise at night and you'll feel great and you'll go to sleep and you'll have a good night's sleep because you're exhausted physically. If you don't, you know, and then they eat, right? They binge eat and they watch TV and they do stupid things. So you got to get them to be mentally and physically tough. So increase the training when things get shitty. And then feed your brain with positive feed it with positiveness. So if you have to listen to motivational tapes while you're running, get yourself fired up, listen to my book, whatever it is, get yourself fired up so that you can come in with good ideas. Don't listen to garbage. Don't listen to this, you know, the talking heads that tell you. There's a book I'm reading right now called The Psychology of Money. And it's good. It's good. It's well written. I think it's very helpful. It's brand new. And it talks about how fast negative news travels and how slowly good news travels.
Yeah.
It took almost five years after the Wright brothers made their first flight till anybody paid any attention to it. They never thought it would be of any commercial use.
Wow.
But you take a dam breaking, everybody hears about it the same day. It's the biggest talk of the town. Mm-hmm. Right? Stock market crashes, everybody talks about it. Stock market goes up and doubles, nobody talks about it. Think about it, right?
Yeah.
When they cut the dividend rate and they cut the, they went from ordinary income rates down to 15% for capital gains and 15% for dividend taxes. Nobody paid any attention. It took 2 years for it really to have an impact on the market. If I changed compensation for you and made it more attractive for you, but you had to do certain things, it would take 2 years for the FAs to adjust their behavior. True.
2 years.
2 years. Because they have to see what it does to their bank account. Basically, they want to see what happens in their check. It takes them a year to understand it, and then it takes them another year to believe it. And then it'll have an impact. And people think that it'll have an impact immediately. Mm-hmm. It doesn't.
You mean management? Or
management thinks it's going to impact immediately.
Mm-hmm.
No. It doesn't. They have no. They don't understand the psychology of what's going on. Good news does not sell. You cut their comp, the whole place will know in 5 seconds.
But they'll know it, right. They'll know it before it ever even becomes a reality.
Correct. They think, oh, they're putting us on salary. I told you they were going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The myth.
Yeah. We deal with, I would say that's one of the perennial things we deal with all the time. I mean, it's just, it never goes away.
Right.
Never.
So you've got to get them thinking about the good news. You got to get them thinking about all the things that are going great and what a blessing it is to be in our business, not all the other crap.
Yeah, I just had that conversation this morning already.
Well, what happens is people take for granted that they can come in and work 4 hours a day and make $600,000 a year or $400,000 a year. And that they could go and do that in any business. And that, my friend, is BS. Okay?
Absolutely.
The rest of the world actually works for a living.
Mm-hmm.
They work hard. And they make 120 grand for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. With ceilings and problems and get their territories cut. And they just have to work. It's really hard out there. Mm-hmm. And our guys just get so spoiled. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's true.
It's so anyway, true. A little off topic, but I think it's, you know, good day. Market's down 800 and good day to talk about the power of full engagement.
Mm-hmm.
Go out there and tell them, get out there and exercise. Reduce the stress because all the talking heads will be on there telling you what this was eventually going to happen. This is it. This is the big one. And instead you want to be like, this is a normal correction in a bull market. And this is what happens. This is when you want to have your limit orders in buying great companies at prices that you think are of real value. Because
mm-hmm.
there is the solution to, I mean, the next webinar I'm going to do is what are you going to do on the other side of the pandemic? you know, what's your practice going to be like? How are you planning? When we go back to normal, what will your day look like? What are you going to do? Are you prepared for it? You haven't really thought about it. You thought, maybe I'll do this. Maybe I'll do. Let's make a plan for exactly what we're going to do and how we're going to market ourselves and what we're going to do and how we're going to use the tools that we've learned to use during this pandemic to make ourselves more productive in the new world. In the, because we're already through this. Okay. I mean, we're going to be through it, and then people are going to be like, holy crap, do you remember when it was this? The next thing you're going to hear is, okay, October 3rd, we're going to have a solution, okay? And we're going to have it for emergency workers. So it's not going to be available to the public till November, but we're going to have it available for you, for the workers, for the teachers, now as a vaccine, and the market will go through the roof. And the question is, are you ready for that? And when everybody's back to work and we don't have an excuse anymore for why things are shitty, what are you going to be doing?
Mm-hmm. I agree. That's one of the reasons you and I are here together. Because that's what I was trying to think about. What is, you know, it's a great time to look at your own business, develop some sort of routine.
What did you do during the pandemic? Did you get, you know, did you transform your practice? Did you get your MBA? Did you get your SEMA? What did you do? Well, I didn't do shit.
Right.
I had all this time. What did you use it for?
Yeah. One of my client's sons, he put some kind of a post out there and he said, shame on you if you go through this whole period and you don't develop a new skill, a new muscle, a new routine, something that's positive, you know, out of it, you know, because you'll miss one of the biggest opportunities. We're always begging for time to be able to, you know, stop, reflect, make changes.
Right.
Gives you the chance to do it. Yeah.
My granddaughter will be a good golfer.
She'll be a good golfer. Baseball is pretty much ended here for us for a while, so hopefully we'll kick in and I will have a good, this will be my son's last baseball season, his last year, you know, in high school. So
what's he gonna do? Is he gonna play in college?
You know, I think he would like to play in college, but he's, you know, I think he's come to grips with the idea that he's probably not going to play in college because he's, you know, he's just not, you know, he's not getting the exposure that he would need, I think.
Where's he going?
Well, he's not even sure right now. So he's, you know, got three or four kind of choices that none of them really excite him. So we're trying to get him dialed in to that. So he'd like to go where his brother went, which was Mercer University, you know, out of Macon. Maybe University of Georgia. You know, if he can get in, so he's got the grades and things like that to get in. And then, you know, the rest of them are just like small colleges, you know, whether it's Georgia College or some others. He doesn't entirely know what he'd like to do. He's talked about doing physical therapy. He's also talked about doing engineering. And so those are pretty vastly different.
Yeah. You know, one is really hard. I mean, they're both hard. I mean, yeah. They're both hard majors. One ends up making a lot of money though as an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
Physical therapist, you're based on your hours, so
yeah, true.
And you're changing hours for work, it's never as good as leverage, right?
Right.
You know that. Yeah. Teaching that.
Mm-hmm.
Now's the time. They go down the path, they make choices. It'd be fun if he could play ball at a Division III school if he really wanted to.
Yeah, and that's what he's, you know, he's questioning what does he want to do? Because he's wanted to play at a D1 school, and that's the whole time, that's all he's talked about is playing D1. And, but he's just not getting enough exposure. He doesn't have enough, you know, kind of travel ball exposure, and he's maturing physically right now more than he has earlier in his life.
Right.
He was always the smallest one in the field, you know, until just recently. And now he's right at 6 feet tall, which is kind of his hurdle, you know, to get to.
No, six. That's it. To be a baseball player today, you got to be tall and you got to be strong. It's like golf.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It used to be just, you know, if you could be small, you could play golf and you could play baseball and you could play tennis. And today, none of the sports can you really be small unless you're just so talented.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, the question is, does he want to play baseball or does he want to play baseball to go in the majors? And that's the question, you know. So
here's the mentality of my son. We used to ask him what he wanted to do, you know, if he thought about it professionally, and he said he's going to hit dingers. So he's going to do it for a living. I'm going to hit dingers, Dad. Really? You're going to hit dingers for a living? Well, get after it. I hope you do.
I know. And they say, I used to ask my daughter, where do you want to go? Dad, I don't want to talk about it. What are you going to do when you get out of college? Dad, I don't want to talk about it. Anything was too much stress, she didn't want to talk about.
And that is Matthew. You know, Matthew is a lot like that.
Well, yeah. Don't just start, you know, when you talk to somebody, it's so weird. You put them in the car and you drive around. You don't look at each other and you talk. Mm-hmm. Or you go on a bike ride or you go on a run, but you can't sit and look eyeball to eyeball with a kid and talk because they won't talk.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So go for a drive. Just drive around. My granddaughter, she said, she's six. She said, Bobo, I don't want to, let's not go home right away. Let's drive around. I said, how come? She said, I want to talk.
That's great.
I want to talk to you about something. It's six. Mm-hmm. I go, okay, we'll drive around for a while.
That's cool. Now, were you on the golf cart or car?
We were in the car. She was in the back seat in her little car seat, and I'm driving, and this is the conversation with a six-year-old. I'm like, what is this?
You know, yeah, this is awesome.
Isn't that fun? So, but that's basically it, you know. Don't look at me. I want to talk. Let's listen.
Yeah, well, they just started back to school today, so it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. This is their first day back since COVID. It's a long time. It's a long time to not be in school.
I know. Well, she's going to be out till January, so that's a long time. She had a play date yesterday with a girlfriend, and they just played all day. They miss each other so much.
Yeah.
It's all right. I need a break before my next call. See ya.
Okay. All right. I'll see you next week. I appreciate you.
Thanks.
All right.
I appreciate you. Thanks, Derek. Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Bye.